Welcome to another episode of the Left Growth Podcast. Today we have got Justin with us right here, and I'm super excited to be having this particular chat, because this was something I've been looking forward to personally as somebody who comes from a marketing background. So it's really, really nice that we are here. And basically, the Left Curve, for those of you who do not know, is an attempt from RadarBlock to make crypto and Web3 knowledge possessed by industry experts and thought leaders accessible to a lot of people. In simple terms, minus the jargon. And in the crypto world, you know, just it's quite easy to get lost in confusing information. Some people oversimplify things. Some people make it way too technical. And that's what we wanted to stay away from. And I think that is something that you have also kind of recreated on your own end. You are the founder of the Safari Club as well. So this is something that we'd be chatting about as well. On the marketing side of Web3, you've brought in quite a lot of familiar concepts from the Web2 world, such as attribution, for example. And you've done a great job at like formalizing a lot of this data-backed growth that seems to be growing now more than ever across Web3. And it's been helping CMOs a lot. And that's when we thought that we should invite you and have this chat here, because a lot of people would either be A, building in Web3 as a protocol, or B, seeking a job in the marketing sector of Web3. So before we start, let me preface that none of what we say is, of course, financial advice. We just keep enthusiasts. Please do your own research before making any investments. And allow me to explain how the podcast is going to flow. We're going to break this down into two phases. We'll discuss the role of data in Web3 growth briefly, like the first phase, and then go deeper into the second phase. So that's all from my end. Justin, would you like to introduce yourself to our audience?
Yeah. Hey, everyone. I'm Justin. I'm the co-founder of Safari. Safari is both the leading customer data platform for Web3 teams, in addition to being Safari Club, which is our community of the top Web3 growth leaders. Excited to be here.
Amazing. Lingo, would you like to go next?
Hey guys, super nice to be having this conversation. My name is Lingo. I'm the co-founder of RadarBlock alongside Adonis. We're a Web3 native growth marketing agency that has been around for like 2.5 years now, done like 45 projects. We kind of help every project on like their growth funnel. So we kind of read everything that's happening on CT day in, day out, sometimes create good memes and have a lot of fun. Super nice to be having this conversation.
Yep. And I think that leaves only me, which is Adonis. I'm one of the co-founders at RadarBlock. And I really like to kind of, you know, have these conversations with a lot of interesting folks, because oftentimes I end up learning something that I was not aware about before. I'm very, very sure that this is going to be one of those podcasts where I walk away with more information than I had at the beginning of it. So let's start from like the very beginning. Justin, can you tell us a little bit about, you know, your journey into Web3, or like how you got onboarded personally?
For sure. So before crypto, I was a growth leader at several marketplace tech companies, where I had the opportunity to lead a range of different strategies from community-led growth to paid advertising and even building incentive experimentation platforms. And so this exposure to different growth models really sort of like shaped my dive into the crypto space. So my co-founder and I dove into crypto at the end of 2021, which was the peak of the last bull market. And we were really captivated by the potential of decentralization and the new business models that blockchain technology could enable. But what really blew my mind was the rapid growth that was happening in the space. There are all these brand new crypto startups scaling at an incredible pace through strategies like airdrops and other Web3 native growth tactics. But what was even more surprising to me was how little attention was being paid to tracking and understanding the impact of these growth strategies. There was almost nobody talking about crypto marketing at the time. And so that's when we ultimately decided to start building an ecosystem for Web3 growth leaders. It started with us building the first community for them, which evolved into publishing research on this rapidly growing sector, and eventually led to us building our own tools that the growth leaders desperately needed. So that's a little bit about my background. It's been a journey over the last 2.5 years from seeing this nascent sector that didn't really exist evolve into now growth leaders are finally taking center stage, and many of these data-driven strategies are coming to fruition.
Super interesting. Yeah, go ahead, Lingo.
And I think like I'd love to ask you like one question, like specifically in this whole scenario, there were like multiple things you could have done on the marketing realm side. So why specifically like attribution as like the problem? You felt that the gap was too big from like how Web2 counterparts operated. Would love to understand like where does data come into picture for this? Like that's our favorite question here.
Yeah. You know, so before we launched Safari's attribution platform, Web3 attribution was like practically non-existent. Teams were operating in the dark, unable to draw meaningful connections between their off-chain activities like social media on Twitter, on their blog, or even community building in Discord, and the on-chain conversion metrics that ultimately mattered to their business. And in addition to that, you know, traditional marketing attribution models and platforms like Google Analytics didn't really fit the crypto-powered world, which meant that Web3 teams really struggled to measure the actual impact of their growth efforts. So I think the sort of like stage in which we came in was, you know, one, this notion of being able to connect the dots between Web2 channels and Web3 outcomes didn't exist. And two, not only were marketers motivated by the understanding of that would drive their growth strategies, but they're also looking for a way to prove that what they're actually doing was working to their technical teams that often didn't understand marketing and wanted to see data-backed evidence to know that what they were doing was actually being effective.
Got it. It's super interesting to kind of like hear about, you know, how you first started out as well. But in terms of like starting out, can you also talk to us what were the problems in attribution when you were starting out? Because I think now people look at the landscape and of course there are different tools that people are using, different tactics, but you know, things were not always like this. So can you talk to a little bit about the history as well?
Yeah. Well, I'd say the history, as I sort of mentioned, is that it just wasn't there. I think that that's the sort of like funny thing. We take attribution as such a given from coming from like a Web2 marketing background that you run these different channels and you're able to understand the impacts down the funnel. But that just wasn't the case. Teams were flying completely blind. And a lot of that was attributed to two things in my mind. One was just the fact that a lot of these Web3 growth tooling companies hadn't existed yet in the space. But the second was also because, especially closer to 2021, we were operating in a much more privacy-centric environment where people really didn't want to track anything or didn't want to be publicly associated with tracking anything. So there was both the infrastructure wasn't actually there yet for these tools, but there was also an ethos of people didn't necessarily want these tools to be built closer to 2021. And as we entered the bear market, a lot of that began to change rather rapidly when growth leaders started demanding to say, like, we can't just fly blind anymore and have, you know, token go up. We actually need to understand what's going on in our protocols, talk to our key users, retain them, and drive growth from there. So I think that this shift is both technological and philosophical for why we've seen attribution come to fruition when it did.
And can you talk to us a little bit about like how, like walk us through your reasoning of starting out Safari? Because I'm pretty sure that, you know, very few people look at a problem and say, yeah, I'll build a tool for that. So you definitely would have faced it yourself personally on like a quite an intense level to kind of have arrived at that decision that, yes, I need to do something.
And I think on top of that, if you can just walk us through like where you said that, hey, how do I, this is like a problem I've identified, right? Where do I start specifically in this? Like, where did you like start out? Okay, I'll just start with like this basic isolation of the problem that I'll solve this first. Like, we want to, like, we understand like how the whole product has shaped out, but like the starting point would be super amazing to understand as well.
Yeah. So for us, we started the growth community in February 2022, and we'd always been building different data growth platforms under the hood with our community, although we didn't come out of stealth as an attribution platform until much later. Our first idea was actually around building a collaborative version of Mixpanel. This was some Mixpanel for those that are unaware. Combines both attribution of understanding conversion events, but also dives a lot deeper into the actual like dApp analytics, being able to understand like what users are doing within your first party application. But for us, we were, you know, closer to the more like idealistic times of the bull market at that point in time, and crypto was really pushing the narrative of being collaborative. And so we thought that there was a really unique, interesting opportunity for us to build a platform where people would make their off-chain data public as well. So there was examples of Dune Analytics, which was really awesome for being able to see, on-chain data. And some of that on-chain data was growth-focused, but we really see the true sort of impact of growth happens between Web 2 and Web 3. And so Dune was only telling half that story. So that sort of was our entry point in, was building a platform where people would make their connect their on-chain and their off-chain data, and then make that public in public growth dashboards that our community would then comment on and speculate on about how companies grew in different phases of their journey. So it sort of began there and then got a lot more focused into attribution. And then I'm sure we'll talk about V2, which is around user analytics later in the podcast as well.
Yeah, absolutely. But like, I would love to understand, like, now that you've said that, okay, we identified like a problem that, okay, this is happening, this like Dune is like having limited landscape as to like what we can understand from the data. I want to understand, how do you perceive data specifically when you say that, okay, this is a data point that matters to my customer and this does not? How does that decision making look like from your side? Like, let's say if you decide to build like a internal dashboard for your product, how do you say that, okay, this seems like something that will matter to a lot of founders? Is there like A/B testing about it? We'd love to understand like how you perceive data and how you want your users to also perceive data in that sense.
Yeah, I think one of the challenges with data is that a lot of times it can be nice to look at, but not actually actionable for growth leaders or for anyone else or other. It becomes sort of more of a reporting dashboard rather than like a data that people take action on. And so we're very clear with ourselves from the very beginning that if we were displaying a chart, if it didn't have an action, we weren't going to build it. And so that's sort of how we've shaped both our early philosophy, but also I think is an important element of data, is that if it doesn't drive a specific action, then it's actually not that useful. So whenever companies would come to us and say, hey, we want to see XYZ type of data or the data structured in this type of way, we would say it back to them, and what are you going to do with that data once you have it? And a lot of times, a lot of protocols didn't necessarily know, right? There's an element of like skeuomorphism for those that were Web2 growth leaders coming into the space and saying, you know, I need to see the types of data that I had seen before in my Web2 background, but that wasn't always actionable for them in the Web3 context.
Got it. And I think like this is really interesting to understand, like from a mindset perspective, like, we've seen like this whole shift of like how markets are performing as compared to life cycle. So do you think like there has been like any deviation on how product usage has also changed from the attribution perspective, that now people seem to be like more data aware, where you're seeing like consumer applications being used by like news outlets like Polymarket, where you're seeing that, okay, now it seems like the crypto data is actually translating and converting into something bigger than itself. How would you compare that to like the 2021 cycle, where you said that you guys were just starting out and there was like a lot of privacy driven sentiment in crypto altogether? So would you say that the whole landscape has also changed over time, and how, if it has changed?
Yeah, I feel like there has always been an importance of data in the crypto space. I think that we especially saw this in the 2021 cycle. Really, Dune dominated that narrative of being able to see public dashboards of protocol level usage data and revenue data for the first time. And that was pretty magical for us to be able to see ourselves, and really opened our eyes to what was possible from like a data transparency standpoint that didn't exist in Web2. And then today, I feel like a lot of teams have moved more internal. So now the focus is on, you know, understanding sentiment analysis, like a lot of people do with Kaido, or understanding their attribution data with Safari to see how users convert. And so we're moving more towards a way where the data is not just being used to understand sort of like the health of a protocol, but actually being used to drive actions that are meaningful for growth strategies. So I think that that's really how I see the main change between the 2021 cycle and now, is before is really about reporting, and now it's about driving growth.
I do think that, you know, you mentioned Kaito in there as well, which is definitely something that, you know, Blingo and I often chat about. I think that is definitely bringing about a new wave of people who are now relying on data. So oftentimes it happens that, you know, you're scrolling through Twitter and you have a hunch of like what's up in the market, but you don't know if that's just your bias or everybody else is feeling the same way. And I think Kaito definitely is solving that across like an ecosystem level. And, you know, when founders today who are utilizing or leveraging Safari are making their decisions, they're not reproached by the thought that they're doing it simply because they feel like it, which is the whole purpose that they went into data the whole way, right? So based on that, what advice would you have for like future founders? Like, how should they be looking at data? How should they be utilizing data into their day-to-day operations or into their campaign designs? How does that look like for somebody who's like watching the podcast and they think, oh, when I launch my protocol, I'm definitely going to leverage data in my decision-making as well?
Yeah, I think that in, you know, a space that's as rapidly evolving as crypto is, it's data-driven decision-making is absolutely essential for founders that want to stay ahead of the curve. You both need to understand what's going on within your own protocol so that, you know, it's both your on-chain data and your off-chain data, but you also need to be able to understand the sentiment that exists beyond your protocol and around your protocol. I think that that's where, you know, Kaito comes in with the sentiment analysis and market understanding. So these two sides, right, I think are key. And the real value comes from when you're doing both of these strategies. You both need to be able to identify your high value users based on their wallet activity, which can help you prioritize different engagement strategies and help you get to know your users better. While at the same time, you need to be able to understand where the market is shifting so that you can understand what the value props that your users might care about might be. You know, we, in our own example, right, like we are building a different tool today than we were building a year ago because the market's shifted, both in terms of philosophy and in technology. But if you didn't have the sort of like data-driven understanding to know that, then you'd be building the wrong thing for a sort of customer group that might not have those needs anymore.
And I think, like, you actually kind of raised the same point that we had in mind. Like, you said that with the rapid shifting environment, it's hard to like stick to one project or like one product altogether. So would love to understand, like, how do you think this perception of Safari has changed? Like, I know you guys launched like a Safari V2 recently. Like, how is it like totally different from like the one that you guys started with? Like, are you guys still on the same page, same thought line, or is it like developed or pivoted into like something completely different altogether?
Yeah, so Safari V1 was all about attribution. We built a modern version of Google Analytics for crypto teams, which gave them the ability to measure the impact of their marketing efforts for the first time. And attribution is necessary and important for any company to have. But what we've seen is that without paid campaigns of some kind, whether that's an ad network, a quest, or something else, it hasn't yet become the sort of must-have that it was in Web 2. So that sort of was our initial hypothesis when we started building the attribution platform, was that performance marketing was going to become a thing sooner rather than later. And, you know, a year into building the platform, we didn't see as much evidence of that as we had expected. I do think that that's changing now, and we probably will see it become more important in the months to come. But that enabled us to think about, you know, where we're really at in a different way. So Safari V2 is all about user analytics. We started ingesting Farcaster data in Safari's platform after Frames launched and built our own Farcaster native attribution. And that totally changed our view of the power of the data that we were collecting. You know, for the first time, we were layering social on-chain identities on top of wallet information and wallet activity, effectively beginning to serve as a targeting and engagement layer on top of our attribution stack. And we're seeing more and more of the best teams trying to build these direct relationships with their users as a result of our platform. So for us, you know, Safari V2 is both a new direction in some ways, but also building on the core of our attribution stack with a powerful new use case around engagement as the primary driver, rather than measuring marketing campaigns like we were doing in V1.
That makes V2 sound really, really exciting. And I really have to kind of like ask this as well, because you mentioned how like in the V1, it was like the Web3 variant of Google Analytics. But even today, if you think about it, how do you see the competitive landscape evolving over time when it comes to Web3 attribution? Like, would you say it's more head-to-head with Google Analytics or a couple of other Web3 native solutions that have been built across the ecosystem? And I'm asking this question in specific to Safari. Like, what is your thought process when you think about, okay, these are the people that we need to compete against? Is it the Web2 standards that you're going for, or how are you conceptualizing that?
Yeah, I think that for user analytics and the way that we're doing it, at least, it really hasn't been done before in crypto, at least, to be able to combine, who somebody is in terms of their social profile, who they know in terms of their social graph, which is very unique to Farcaster, for example, what they own, which is their wallet data, and what they've done within the first party application, and then how it's all connected. So I think that this is sort of a unique spin on things. But if we zoom back out to the attribution market, the Web3 attribution landscape is still emerging, but it's also very specialized in certain ways. So the current players, as I see them today, are Safari, Spindle, Helica, Cookie3, and Addressable. We're all operating in the same space of having attribution as our sort of like core layer. But what we build on top of that all looks different. So for example, Spindle and Addressable have leaned into the ad network space and built ad networks on top of that, making that their core business. Helica does everything in the gaming space and nothing else. Cookie3 tries to cover a sort of broader spectrum, offering solutions from that range from attribution to also affiliates and advertising and KOL partnerships. But we've really taken a different route. So while the others have really prioritized acquisition, we've chosen to focus on engagement. And that's, I think, where sort of Safari V2 really comes to fruition as being this centralized layer where sort of paving the path for a brave new world of Web3 growth that we've long dreamed about, which is a unified customer data layer where you can get a full 360-degree view of your users matched with the ability to reach them on the channels that they use most, whether that's Twitter, Telegram, Farcaster, DBank, etc.
Interesting. And I want to take like a candid detour in like asking you something. So like a lot of Web3 market right now, we come from an environment where, there were a lot of discussions on the internet the other day about like how BD operates, and you're like always texting or DMing other people, so on and so forth. But overall, the narrative has been that, okay, it's very easy to like track partnerships in Web3. You're like very welcoming as an entity. You're always open to talking to new projects. So do you think that's like similar in the attribution space of Web3 as well? Do you see like collaboration being done between some of these applications that you talk about? Would we see like something Kaito X Safari in future, where we see like a lot of these products actually coming together and working together to solve this thing? Or right now, maybe it's like more isolated where they all have their own journeys, as you said, that they're taking like different routes altogether. Would love to understand your thoughts on that as well.
Yeah, I think it really depends on the platform. So for Safari, our position on attribution is that attribution platforms should be neutral. By neutral, I mean they shouldn't also have an acquisition channel with them. So that's like, we saw this in Web2 in particular, those that were attribution players and also launched ad networks were not that trusted, because they're then incentivized to promote their ad networks over being sort of the neutral source of truth. So to that extent that we are, quote unquote, the only credibly neutral attribution player, we'd be very happy to work with and collaborate with these other platforms that started in attribution, but have evolved into new use cases that focus on acquisition as well. So I think it really depends. for us in Kaido, I think that there could be some interesting things as well between our data sets. But at least for the core attribution players, I think that we can work nicely with any of them, given our sort of neutrality stance.
I think that's super interesting to hear. And I think we'll take like a slight shift from like Safari as a product or like attribution as a space to like just overall in general growth for like Safari. So we've talked a bit about the whole community angle of how you guys have like Safari Club and how it came along. Let's try to understand more, like where does that decision making come from? Like, did you guys say that, let's think of it this way, that it's a chicken or egg? Does the community come first, or like does the product come first? Where did you see it? And like, we'll also love to understand, like, from your understanding, like, I've seen that Safari Club gets like thousands of applications every cycle, and we'd love to understand, like, what role do you think it plays from your product perspective? That does that traction translate into like some of the users for you, or like customers in some sense, or like what does it look like?
Yeah, for sure. So two things. One, I think that what we realized when we first entered the space, and as I mentioned, that nobody was really talking about crypto marketing or anything around like data-driven acquisition in 2021, 2022, we realized that we couldn't just launch a B2B product, like a B2B growth tool, out into like the world, right? If there's not an industry, if growth leaders don't know each other, if they're not sharing strategies with each other, then there's no market basically for growth leaders. There's a lot of product education and just general education on the crypto space that we needed to do. So that is why also it made sense from our perspective that we needed to develop Safari the community. Safari the community, Safari the ecosystem. We need to build and grow at this ecosystem, accelerate the careers of growth leaders, make them more important within the ecosystem, or visible, in order for our product to be ultimately successful. So that's one piece of the answer for why we were motivated to build Safari Club as a community. The other answer is, you know, when I look at typical sort of B2B growth strategies, it's usually, hey, let me like shove my product down your throat. And then also, by the way, over here, we have like a newsletter or a podcast or some of the other resources that like you actually care about, but we're not going to tell you about those things, right? It's like my product. And so for me as a growth leader, you know, I think that whenever you see a lot of, you know, one strategy commonly in the market, there's always an opportunity to say, what if we did the exact opposite? How would that play out? And that's often where a lot of growth leverage can come from. So our strategy is the exact opposite. We lead with the community, which is the thing that growth leaders actually want the most. They want connection to other growth leaders that are smart in their industry. They want to learn from other growth leaders, and they want to see what other growth leaders are doing beyond their space. And so we lead with community, and then we say, if you're curious, we have a product. We're not going to tell you about it. Let us know if you want to learn more. So we take that opposite approaches. We lead with content. We lead with community. We lead with all the things that marketing professionals and growth leaders need at any stage in their career to build trust, long-term trust with them for when that moment comes that they're ready to implement an attribution platform or user analytics platform. They think about Safari first, and we've built that loyalty and with them over time. To your final question, that strategy is absolutely working well for us. To the extent that many of the people that join our batches immediately turn around and implement Safari's platform. But again, we don't pitch Safari's platform in the community ever at all. And we also don't even like bring it up to them until they've been a member for at least 6 months. So that's a little bit about how we think about Safari the community and how it affects our product growth strategy.
And that's super interesting, because like I've been a fan of like the whole Safari's community efforts. In fact, like one of my favorite events at ETH Denver was the Safari Day. So I think like I listened to all panels, and I was like one of the only persons like taking notes and everything about like, okay, this is happening. And we had such great panels that day, and I was like totally inspired. In fact, I was also talking to T-Pan yesterday, and we're trying to get him on as a speaker on the podcast as well. So I think like overall, we've been like big fans of the work that you guys have been doing, and it's super interesting. In fact, like even to like some of the listeners who are also like people who are building in the space, they might be like interested in understanding that how this whole product-led strategy has worked for you. Like in fact, that the whole community being wrapped around, not as like a clear pitch where you kind of shove them on their face, but just it being like complementary to one another does like for the project. Because like we talk to a lot of founders day in, day out, and this is what they want to understand, that, okay, do I even need a community? Yes, you do, because this is how it translates to like future users or like future evangelists at the end of the day, which is something super important in Web3. I don't know, any thoughts on that?
I would just say that I'm a big fan of Justin's contrarian thinking. That is that usually a lot of gold mines come from going in the opposite direction or looking where other people are conventionally not looking. I do agree with Blingo there that community is definitely very important. Most people fail to see the benefit of that when it's in its budding stage. So nobody would appreciate 2 regular AMA listeners, but you know, everybody wants 100 regular AMA listeners and would die for 1,000 regular AMA listeners. But what people need to understand is that the journey to that particular point starts with those 2 people who are up at 3 a.m. in their time zone and are listening to you. And those are the people that you need to kind of almost enrich and empower and give them a shout out as well if you can. And that is like the surest way to success. Is it fast? No, unfortunately not. Is it bound to work? Yes, it will. Because at that point of time, slow and steady definitely ends up winning the race when it comes to building a community. And I think this actually kind of ties back to the next question that I also wanted to ask, not necessarily about community and how to grow that, but rather in the attribution space and how to grow there. So for somebody who's listening right now to us and they're entering into the Web3 attribution space altogether, which is, you know, a little bit confusing because it's not yet completely formalized. And I don't think it will be for some time, given how quickly we are moving, not only in the attribution space, but across crypto as an industry as a whole. What advice would you give to somebody who's like just starting out here?
Yeah, I'll say I think that the biggest piece of advice is to understand and recognize that the space is still evolving, and what works today and what growth leaders want today might not work, or they might not be interested in tomorrow. So it's really important to be constantly experimenting with new approaches to give yourself an edge. For us, for example, you know, what we've seen is our initial community hypothesis was if we get around the best growth leaders in the world and hear exactly what types of strategies they're deploying, then that will enable us to build the best product possible for them faster than anybody else. And while I think that that is true, I think that crypto moves so quickly that actually it's important for B2B growth tools to be one step ahead of even some of those best growth teams. And to, in order to be one step ahead of those growth teams, they need to launch consumer experiences themselves too. And so we've done that with Safari, for example. Before we launched our Farcaster attribution feature, we launched our own Farcaster frames of a Web3 growth playbook that we created. And we're building sort of distribution around that. Getting people to mint our playbook on chain and go through our frame. And so I think that these types of things are important for anyone who's building any kind of growth tool, and especially for attribution, to understand is that it's not enough to be in lockstep with your customers. You actually need to be oftentimes much more innovative than your customers are. And you probably find that as well, even in the agency space, is that it's not enough to work with the best growth teams as customers. You also need to be thinking one step ahead of them. And to be able to think one step ahead of them, you often have to launch your own experiments that go beyond their platform as well. So I think that that's the best advice that I could give anyone at this point in time is if you're a B2B builder, you also have to launch B2C consumer experiments if that's who your customers are.
And I think like it's so funny that you did mention this, because like this whole cycle, we've been pitched to start a meme grind either by our own employees or like they're saying that, okay, I just launched like my Pom.Fun coin. Can you guys help me promote it? We're like, wait, guys, I know you guys are excited about doing this, but there are like legal reasons we should not like just play around with these tools like from an entity scale. But yeah, I think it has been super important, like even just launching this podcast altogether, we've been trying to understand like, okay, let's try to see like what is something, what audiences are like used to, where is content getting traction, where can we do it better? So I think it has been a lot of beta testing, because like for someone like us, like I think you already know that we come from a bootstrap background. We're like experimenting with every piece of the funnel. So we're trying to see like, okay, we need to be lean. At the same time, we need to identify like where the growth hacks are and what can be the next big thing. So I think like I try to see like the whole attribution space as like more matured now. And we're trying to push like some of our clients to take like more data-backed decision-making slowly and steadily. And I think we're getting like more positive response now than we were getting like initially, because like the overall trust in the attribution space is also growing with time. So I think this has been like the biggest getaway for us, like in terms of how the whole perception of the founder is working, because a lot of things actually depend on founders themselves. And at times I feel that any opportunities like this where you're talking about how this whole industry is, it's super important for founders to listen to in the first place, because a lot of them are like stuck in silos. Like even yesterday, we were just talking about, okay, these are the algorithms, like how has this been working? And this is how the whole performance has been on the Twitter side. And the founder goes like, thank you for telling us, because like, we've been so stuck with our own product. We never thought of like taking a look at what's happening on the Twitter side or like what's happening in the growth marketing funnel. So I think it has been super interesting. I am sure Adonis has like a lot of opinions as well. He's been super quiet today. Like, what's up?
No, I was just thinking, because I completely agree. And I see the parallels that, you know, that Justin, you're mentioning when it comes to attribution, and how I see parallels in our day-to-day work, specifically mine and Lingo's, because we have to hop on calls with founders and we see kind of like the other side of the equation, which is the person who is quote-unquote using the attribution platform in some sense. And I think one of the most important points is that they need to be able to trust these attribution systems. I think Safari is playing a great role in that. Anybody who's tweeting about attribution is doing a great role for that across all of Twitter, because if you remember back when you guys launched your V1 and you were just starting out, there were no tweets about attribution. There were no tweets about, you know, how you can track your data. Today, you may even come across a Web3 playbook or like how you should be a social media manager. Just the other day, I was reading this, really long form tweet about, you know, all the experiences that a social media manager has shared after 4 years of working, at notable protocols. And I believe that, well, first of all, back in 2021, it would be really surprising to find someone who has spent 4 years trying to work on a social media profile of a protocol, right? And so we definitely have matured there, that where people have spent enough time to gather enough experience to now kind of consolidate them and, you know, give them out as insights. So that is definitely a good direction in which we are headed. I hope to see more in the future, more playbooks coming from Safari, more insight-led articles being written by you guys. Because I think you guys are doing a phenomenal job at optimizing for convenience and short attention spans, which is why I think you guys have done, you know, taking the right decision to actually use a lot of those, golden nuggets on Twitter, which you usually put out. And I think one question that I always ask to all the guests who come on to the podcast is, who is one another Web3 child that, you know, you would want us to interview on the Left Curve podcast as well?
I think the most obvious one for my mind is Blue, who's the CMO at Trader Joe. He's one of the very few growth leaders out there that's been at a major protocol since the very beginning and successfully grown a crypto brand from 0 to 1, the 1 to 10, and beyond. So that would be the clear answer from my point of view.
Yep. I think I've had like chats with Blue, and you have to really appreciate it when somebody as busy as him replies in a flash. He's always really quick with his replies, and I always appreciate him for that as well. I think this podcast has been like super insightful. This particular episode where we touched upon, you know, the basics of attribution, how Justin, you got started, the transition from Safari V1 to V2, and then the whole growth club as well, plus your advices for somebody who's just like starting out. I think a lot of our listeners would derive a lot of value from there, and hopefully, even though, you know, you do not intend for any of the social activities to drive more product users, this podcast may just get you more people using Safari as well, because they're just listening to this and they're like, that's what I'm looking for. That's what I needed to get started as well. So if you love the show, by the way, and this is to our listeners, please do give us a follow on @ReadUpBlock and our account @DoYourXAdonisTyrrell and @DoYourXLingono. Make sure you follow our guest Justin as well @JK_ETH. So that is all from our end. Thank you so much for joining in, Justin. It was a pleasure having you.